The alternate title that I offered, which did not appear, was one of the most important things you'll be doing for the rest of your life. And I feel that I am qualified to discuss this subject because I've been married for almost 40 years, and I've done a lot of listening. Certainly the lament of every parent, every child, every husband, every wife, every pastor, every parishioner, and a lot of other people is, you have ears, but you do not hear. And we always say, listen, God, thy servant speaketh, instead of saying, speak, Lord, thy servant heareth. And everybody has problems with this. God and the prophets had problems with this too, didn't they? In fact, if you go through the Bible, and if you're one of these people that count the references to hearing, listening, and related subjects, you'll find there are over 1,200 references to hearing, listening, and that type of thing in the Bible, probably more than any other subject. So I feel it is very important. I can tell you a lot of stories about bad listening. In fact, I could use the time till Vespers to tell you about my experiences with bad listening. I'll only give you two. One of them is my Uncle Louis. Uncle Louis wasn't really brilliant, and he was pretty tough. And when he lived near Stanwood, Washington, he got to be about 65, and he'd had a bellyache by then about 10 years. So he finally decided that he heard about annual physicals, and this is going to be his first one at 65. So he went into the doctor's office, and the nurse said, stripped to the waist. So Uncle Louis took off his pants. In Stanwood, too, there are... Ole and Anna were having their 50th anniversary. It was a great event. Everybody turns out for those kind of affairs there. And Ole really got turned on. And when the ceremony was about over, he went to Anna and he says, Anna, I love you. Now, he hadn't said that for about 50 years. So, and worst of all, she couldn't hear very well. And she says, what? And he said it louder, Anna, I love you. And she thought she heard him and says, well, I'm getting pretty tired of living with you, too. I was going to tell that story when I gave the banquet address at the ALC convention in Spokane for Solberg's retirement banquet. And I was going to tell my wife, but the joke doesn't set too well with me because my wife, I came home one day and my wife had lost her hearing. And it's a new ball game then. It's really a new ball game. And I have sympathy for Anna because you can say something and it may not get through. About 98% of what we learn, we learn through our eyes and our ears, for those of you who have functional members in these areas. But only until recently has there really been much attention paid to this. And one of the ways to check this is by cartoons, stories, and buttons. And one teacher said to one of the boys in her class, do you have trouble hearing? Because he was sitting there sort of daydreaming. And he says, nope, I have trouble listening. And that's part of our trouble. And people send me buttons. I'm a button collector, and I see some of you are wearing buttons. The first one, and I have very unusual buttons. I just have a few of them along tonight. PBPGINFWMY. Please be patient. God hasn't finished with me yet. That's what that means. But of all the buttons I got, my wife just picked up a few that she thought I'll use. Like Think Lefse, Think Lutfisk, Think Manure, Leo the Lion is a vegetarian. Ufta, Norwegian Power. You know, I've never seen a button with Swedish Power on it. I don't know if you have or not. Archie Bunker for president. Take a frog to lunch. The world is going to pot. Hogs are beautiful. And this whole array of buttons that I have only one that might apply. Well, I've lost my most important one. I hope you find it for me. It's vote no for dog catcher. Oh, here it is. Vote no for dog catcher. Picture of Snoopy. But I have one here. It says, I am a human being. Do not fold, spindle, or mutilate. And the plea is, you know, nobody's listening. Nobody's paying any attention. Now, there was a survey done, and interest started in this thing, really. It really got going in about 1950 or so. And a fellow named Jones in Ohio obtained the cooperation of a lot of people in that area to fill out a survey. They did what we did in General Electric Company for quite a while. Periodically, we'd keep track of how we spent each day and how we wasted the company's time. But if you're really honest with yourself, you can learn a lot this way by keeping track of how you spend each day. Well, that's what they did. And he was particularly interested in communication. And his results went something like this over, I think, a period of a couple of months. About 9 or 10% of their day was spent in writing. About 16% in reading. 28% in speaking. And about 45% in listening. And when I read his results a long time ago, I said, you know, that's really fantastic. I have spent, in my education, I've lost count, but it included, you know, through grade school, high school, 14 years at university. And in this time, I had spent a lot of time learning how to write, learning how to read. I had one course in speech. But I had never had a course in listening, no formal course in comprehensive listening, yet that's what I'd be doing, and that's what I've done the most in my life. I've probably done it more than I've done sleeping. And that's kind of tragic, really. And it's a teachable skill. And I won't call for a show of hands here, but I often call for a show of hands because in a few weeks I'll be giving a talk something like this to the entering students into our college. And now a few people are raising their hands when I say, have any of you had a course in comprehensive listening? But there still aren't very many. Now, there were some other studies about this time. A fellow named Jones at Columbia was very concerned about his class in psychology. There were some 400 students in the class, and he was worried about them. And so he organized some very good lectures. And then he developed some very good examination questions, which he gave them right after he gave the lecture, that he thought they should be able to answer. And there was an average retention of 50% of what he thought they should have gotten from listening to the lecture. And then he waited 2 weeks, and it was down to 25%. Now, you can't run a business with this kind of efficiency. Well, there was a fellow at Nichols at the University of Minnesota who read about this, and he was very concerned about it and very interested in this subject. He did some very interesting studies. And so he corralled a bunch of the herring chokers that frequent the University of Minnesota, and he used a little different format. He obtained the services of the best lecturers that he could find. And he says, here, I want you to come in and give them 10 or 15 minutes of your best lecture. And then you give me the questions you think they should be able to answer as a result of hearing you lecture. And he did that. And so he gave him the exam right after the test, and there was an average retention of about 50%. He didn't wait 2 weeks. He only waited 2 days, and it was down to 25%. And it really shocked him. It didn't really shock me. At that time, I was at the University of California. And I'd lecture medical students there and veterinary students. I'd give them brilliant lectures. I'd follow it with enlightened examinations. And then I'd collect up the examinations and retreat to my home and into my study and close the door and read the examination answers and weep. I knew something that wasn't right in this business, that people really weren't listening. So what I did about this is what I'm going to do for you tonight, is to review with you some of the characteristics of a bad listener. And you'll recognize them in your friends. And if you're really honest with yourself, by the cool of the morning, you may even recognize some of them in yourself. And the first one is that the bad listener decides that the subject is uninteresting or useless and then turns them off. Well, one of my favorite authors is G.K. Chesterton, and he wrote some beautiful stuff, including some very beautiful stuff on pigs, which I will discuss Friday night. But he said there's no such a thing as an uninteresting subject, just uninterested listeners. And it's right. You should take this as a challenge. Whenever you hear someone speak, even if the announced subject is the care of camellias in nuclear attack, maybe there's something in it for you. So you take each one of these as a challenge and say, now, what is in there for me? The second thing that the bad listener does is to wait to deliver a speech carefully rehearsed while listening. And you can't really do it that way. And the third one is like it. He or she listens carefully for flaws in the presentation so that at the first opportunity they can clobber the speaker. You can't listen that way either. Another thing the bad listener does is he or she does not comprehend nonverbal communication. Now, I have an advantage over most of you in this regard because I'm a veterinarian. And I spent many years learning how to diagnose and conditions in somebody that cannot articulate to me their problems. Where does it hurt? Huh? Well, that does present a problem. It's not an unmixed blessing, Lord, that our patients cannot lie to us. But this is a very important area. In fact, I read some statistics the other day that I have a hard time believing. But some of you may who deal in this. And that is that in communication, it's 55% body language, about 38% tone of the voice, and 7% of the words. And with some people, that's sort of true. So it's well that we become familiar with this. And I'm kind of a, as I've told many audiences, I'm sort of a Jerry Ford type guy. Some of you don't remember him. He was a president a while back. And he'd get up real early in the morning and cook his own breakfast. Remember that? And that's what I do. And I do it for a very good reason. I like some quiet time, and in my business, I don't have that. My job is one of interruptions. But there's another reason for it. I tried it another way first. But you have to respect another person's physiology. And to ask my wife to get up at 5:30 in the morning to cook me breakfast is beyond her capabilities. At 5:30 in the morning. I tried it for a while. And she'd put the tea kettle on the right rear and turn on the left front. Put raisins in my Russian tea and generally jazz things up. It was not consistent with a long marriage. So now she stays in bed. In fact, now it's easy. I mean, the alarm can't even wake her up. But she's usually awake. When I come home at 6:30 at night, she has supper for me. You see, I'm a morning person, and she's a night person. That brings up other problems, which I will not discuss. Another thing the bad listener does is to fail Well, there's one other one I want to bring out here. It's an important one on nonverbal communication. I got it in my right hand here. And I almost forgot. That's what happens to you when you get old. There was a fellow from New York City. He went, his folks sent him out west to go to New Mexico, to New Mexico State, to go to school. And he befriended, in fact, his roommate for a while was a Native American. And he was after this Native American, you know, you got to come and see what New York City is about. You know, how we live out there. I suppose he told him, after all, you folks owned it for a while. And he was after him, but he never came while he was in school. And about 2 years after they graduated, they made arrangements and he went out to see him. And you know, along Theater Row in New York City, about all these people, and he was going to, you know, he wasn't going to let this happen. He appealed to the high command. He got unsatisfactory and noisy. And there's some potted plants along. And they were walking along here, and he was showing him everything. And suddenly the Native American stopped and says, I hear a cricket. And his old roommate says, you got to be out of your tree. You know, you can't hear a cricket here. Oh, he says, I'm sure I hear a cricket. And he went over to one of these potted plants and pulled out a cricket. And the Native American says, a very profound thing. He says, it all depends on what you're listening for and what you're trained to hear. And he reached in his back pocket and pulled out a 50-cent piece, threw it on the sidewalk. 10 people dove for it. Sometimes, in the old days, I used to, sometimes, in the summer, you'd start lectures here at 8:30, and you had to have an eye-opener. And the people would wander down at 8:30 in the morning, you know, like zombies. And they'd be sitting out here, and the challenge was to get them. One of the things I'm a birder. I watch birds. And I'd ask them, you know, how many birds did you hear coming down to this lecture this morning? And in June, you might hear maybe 10 or 11. Sunday morning, there were only two, chickadees and red-breasted nuthatch. And they're for real. If you don't watch birds, that's a real name. But usually, none of them heard it. They never heard 10 birds. They didn't even hear one. What? Wow, birds, you know. Well, it's all what you're trained for. Another thing the bad listener does is to fail to comprehend that every person is unique. We all say, well, he or she is just an average person. How many times have you said that or heard it? I'm here to tell you there is only one of these. There's only one average, one person. Everyone else is different. Everyone is a unique creation of a great creator. And you must recognize that. Everyone is different. You say, well, how about similar twins? I have a dog that'll tell the difference. Even similar twins. Another thing the bad listener does, he or she cannot cope with periods of silence and use them effectively. And I've heard about as many lectures as probably anybody here tonight in my lifetime. And usually they're good for about two or three good ideas every 50 minutes. And sometimes they tell you old tired jokes, and sometimes they stop and they talk about what I'm doing now at about 105 words a minute. And there is some time that you have, or if they stumble. And I've actually tried this as an experiment in a very large auditorium. And I was going along because I had a set time. In a lot of places where I speak, you have a set time, just like your Vespers here. They give you 20 minutes. They always tell me that 10 times before I get up here. I haven't made it yet, but they're going to give me one more chance. But you might go along at about 200 words a minute, which I'm going now. And if you find out that if you're talking about 200 words a minute, people may pay very close attention because they're afraid they'll miss something. And then you suddenly stop, you shuffle your papers as if you have lost your place, and that's easy for me because I often do. And you'll find out that if you are shuffling with your papers for about 20 to 25 seconds, the natives become very restless. And they start wondering if the old geezer has had a heart attack and stuff like that. The take-home story here is that when you're listening to a lecture, you should, when you have moments of silence such as I have described, or when they're telling you a tired old joke that you've already heard, or they're telling you something you already know, you utilize that time efficiently to recapitulate. So that in most lectures that you will hear, you'll have time during the lecture to recapitulate. And I have gone as much schooling as almost anybody you know. And if there had been a shortcut to learning, I think I would have found it. And I didn't find it short of recapitulation, keeping using it over again and over again. I didn't find a shortcut. So you recapitulate so that by the end of the lecture here, for example, tonight, with some of the tired old stories that I'll be giving you, you'll have time so that you can recapitulate on the points that I am giving you that are worthy of retention. Another thing that the bad listener does is to fake attention. We do that at the coffee, at breakfast in the morning, don't we? For those of you who eat or at night, when you come home for dinner, like I'm charging home at 6:32, the chief is usually ready, and when she could hear, the TV was usually over there for the evening news, you see. But she hasn't seen me since the day before, so I'd talk to her, and you know, I'd kind of look over and see how Cronkite is doing, I don't read the paper in the mornings. So look over in the headlines, and you're trying to listen to the wife. You're faking it. Little kids do that in grade school. We do a lot of this. Be sincere, even if you don't mean it. That's the watchword today. And that isn't. Really the way to do it. My wife tells this story about two psychiatrists, one young one and one old one. They worked in the 22nd floor of the medical dental building. Often they saw each other coming to work and then going home at night, although the young one usually worked longer. This particular night, he was leaving. He ran out of his office to catch the elevator. It was 5:30. And he got to the elevator just about to leave. The only one in the elevator was the old psychiatrist. And he had had a tough day, listening to all these terrible problems all day. And he said to the old psychiatrist, he said, "You know, I saw you come to work this morning. And you look as fresh as you did this morning." He says, "How can you go through a day like today that I've had listening to all of these problems and still look as fresh as you did this morning?" And the old psychiatrist said, "Who listens?" That's a good question today. And the other story that I've told here before, but I think it's very apropos here, and it's very tragic, really. The psychiatrist in a busy practice downtown was already late past time, and he was about to escape out the back door when his receptionist came running in and says, There's a person out here that you got to see tonight. You can't go home without seeing this guy. He's in bad shape." He said, "Okay, send him in." So he came in, listened to his story, and he was lowering a snake in a wagon track. And like in the health professions as we are, you're often not only pressed for a diagnosis, but also a treatment. How are you going to tide him over till tomorrow? And this psychiatrist had a brilliant idea, because he himself was a circus buff. And he said very confidently — that's very important when you're in the health delivery systems, to be confident. Here's what I want you to do tonight. There's a great circus in town, and they have a lot of great acts. Now, you're not going to be able to see all these acts, and there's one that I don't want you to miss, and that's the clown. He's the greatest clown I've ever seen. Don't miss the clown. Long period of silence. And then his patient said, "I am that clown." The toughest job I had to do in Stanwood High School was to be in a play. And we had a teacher, Mrs. Audrey Tunham. And she was always putting on a play. And I'd hide. But she always found me. Because she was always, it wasn't a very big high school. 100 of us, 4 years. So she was all running out. She'd always get me in these plays. Toughest job I ever did was to be somebody that I was not. That's a tough job, to carry a facade. It's a heavy piece of merchandise. I don't recommend it. You be yourself. Another thing that the bad listener does is to tolerate the bad performance of the lecturer. Now, that doesn't mean next Sunday when you go home to your church and you don't agree with something the pastor says, or from the sermon, you stand up and say, "Hey, pastor, it's wait till it's over with." But we do owe one another the benefit of constructive criticism. It's part of our problem today. We talk we're very articulate about all the problems of other people, but never directly to them. We tell other people about them instead of with them. And we tear ourselves today, and bad news is what makes the news. You judge what you say to another person by answering in the affirmative three questions. Is it kind? Is it true? Is it necessary? Now, that'll shorten a lot of conversation. But I hasten to point out that in my experience, after criticism, I have had to agree that it was necessary, it was true, but I had some problems whether it was kind or not, especially if I lost sleep for a couple of nights. But I had to agree that in the long run, it was also kind, and that's what I'm most concerned about. And you should also be concerned about that. C.S. Lewis, I'm a fan of C.S. Lewis, and I exchanged letters with him before he died. And he said a lot of great things. One of the things he said was that no friend is a friend of mine if he doesn't care whether I lie, cheat, and steal. If we really care about somebody, we do care whether they lie, cheat, and steal. We really do. And that's when I took over a laboratory in California that was going downhill, and this was one of the problems. And they were talking behind each other's back. They never approached one another. And I told them the day that they do something wrong and they know that I know it and they know it, and if I don't say anything to them, they better start worrying because I've given up on them. I don't care about them anymore. In Galatians 6:1, it tells when somebody goes off the deep end and makes a mistake. You get the brethren together, the brothers and the sisters, really, and you correct them very gently. I think the Gudbrandsdalen edition of the Norwegian Bible probably says you do it with warm fuzzies. But that's right. You correct with warm fuzzies. But you correct. We owe one another the benefit of constructive criticism. Another thing the bad listener does is to shun technical and painstaking listening. What Nichols did in this case, and some of these are his characteristics. What I've done is to improve on Nichols's list and add some myself. He doesn't know it, and I don't think he cares. And he might not agree. You know, the bad news here is that after 2 days after this lecture, if I test you, and the average retention is 25%, there's even worse news. That means half of them are less than 25%, roughly half, you know. And that's the group he concentrated on, and one of the things he asked him was, what kind of TV programs do you listen to? Gunsmoke, I Dream of Jeannie, Hogan's Heroes. And I was in prison camp, and it was never like that. I'm here to tell you that. And they listened to the Democratic National Convention, the Republican National Convention. You have to listen to something that's hard to listen to so that you concentrate on it. That's how you learn comprehensive listening. You can't do it with watching trash like that on the idiot box. Another thing the bad listener does is to allow emotional words to throw them. I don't know what your hang-ups are, but I bet I could go through 25 words here and I could lose most of you. Because that word would, you know, you'd be gone. Now, I'll tell you one that got me. And some of you can appreciate this. Because in my home, in the living room, there was a picture of Leif Erikson discovering America. And when I went to school, they told me Christopher Columbus discovered America, 1492. And every time they told me that, my blood pressure rose. So I knew he was a Johnny-come-lately, 400 years late, 500 years late. But they kept telling me that. They may be still teaching it. So that's an emotional word for me. In fact, I still celebrate Columbus Day. I send out Leif Erikson cards. We friends of mine exchange them then. But fight the feeling. Don't let emotional words throw you. Another thing the bad listener does is to talk while they should be listening. I don't have to say much about that. Not only disturbs yourself, but the other people too. Now we're two from the end, and I got several things I have to tell you yet. The bad listener questions for victory rather than clarification. It's a kind of a one-upmanship game, isn't it? Between husband, wife and husband, between teachers and students. Boy, the students are really doing it to us teachers today. Always a one-upmanship game. They're getting even with us. They're questioning for victory rather than clarification. This happens to couples these days. I know of one that went to see their pastor. He sent him to a good counselor, and he diagnosed their situation right away. That's what they were doing. They were playing a game. And he said, here, what I want you to do for the next 3 weeks is to, whenever one of you says something more complicated than pass the salt, which you shouldn't even be passing, you are to repeat what the other one says. And pretty soon they were sort of tragically laughing because they really hadn't been communicating. Because they were questioning for victory rather than clarification. Now, the last question is, the bad listener criticizes the speaker for ineptness, for appearance, and what they're wearing, how they look, Some of you, for some of you, this is the first time you've ever seen me. And I watched some of you come in. You did a double take. I'd like to have that nose full of nickels. Look at the ears on him. Ben Franklin looked better in his glasses than I. And I didn't dare show you my tie. Because people don't wear ties in Holden. I don't know if you've thought about it, but ties are about the most useless thing you can get. Unless they keep you warm. And this is a belly warmer. Okay? My wife made me that a long time ago. And it's a utilitarian tie. It has a zipper on it. It has a pouch like a kangaroo. Got a zipper. Carry notes in it. Now I'm going to tell you about some of these things in a minute. If you're speaking at Weight Watchers Club for lunch, carry a sandwich. And I always carry a little dessert in there because you don't always get dessert at Holden. So I keep a little dessert in here. And also, you know, the regular ties, if you think about it, they're useless. And it's even worse than that because you spill gravy and soup on them. No, unless you're going to be a slob, you got to get them cleaned, and that's expensive. Well, if you hold this right, it drops in here. I haven't cleaned that thing for 15 years. I'm not going to show you the inside, but it works. And there is another thing about it that I should mention, is that if you wear these to a cocktail party, which is the bane of my existence, and before the night is out, some turkey is going to come up to you, going to put his arm around you and say, "Hey, buddy, the fly on your tie is half open." Well, one night I spoke to a women's club. They didn't have a podium. So I climbed up on something like this, and they were all gathered around like this. And so I pulled up my pants legs. Green sock on one side and white on the other. It happened to be orange that night, see? And I lost them, you know. They were writing notes, you know. See? You see, the point of this whole story is that, and why I went into quite a bit of this, is, and this is the last point that I'm going to give you, criticizing the speaker for ineptness or how he talks or how he looks, is that while you're doing that, you aren't really listening. The only reason that you go and hear someone speak to you here or anywhere is that they're going to make you laugh, which is the most healthful thing you can do today. It's the best prescription. Or something edifying or giving you something that you should know. You are not there to make judgments of the speaker. That only compromises you from your real duty there. And that's why I went through all this. And also that you got to laugh. All right, now, a couple other things. I think I still have about 10 minutes, I hope. There's some other dimensions to this, and it's sad. Here's what one person wrote. It's not crowds that wear me. It's the kind of crowd that doesn't care at all about what I came to say. You can walk New York to London on the ocean. You can pull gold coins out of forever and still not make them care, you know. When he said that, he looked lonelier than I had ever seen a man still alive. He didn't need food or shelter or money or fame. He was dying of his need to say what he knew, and nobody cared enough to listen. And in this regard, I'll read you what John Godfrey said at the dedication of a very large building that he had constructed in his old age. He wouldn't tell anybody what it was. His parents had been immigrants. They wanted him to be a lawyer because lawyers run the country. And so he became a lawyer. He wanted to be something else. But he did a pretty creditable job of it. And he had accumulated a lot of land. He sold it off, some of it. And so he built this beautiful building. And at the dedication, he said this, because he wouldn't tell anybody what it was about. And they noticed that a sign went over the building that said, "The Man Who Listens." He said, "One of the most terrible aspects of this world today is that nobody really listens to anyone else. If you are sick or even dying, nobody listens. If you are bewildered or frightened or lost or bereaved or alone or lonely, nobody really listens. Even the clergy are hurried and harassed.
They do their best and work endlessly, but time has taken on a fragmented character. It doesn't seem to have any substance any longer. Nobody has time to listen to anyone, not even those who love you and would die for you. Your parents, your children, your friends, they have no time. It's a very terrible thing, isn't it? Whose fault is it? I don't know, but there just doesn't seem to be any time. Now, these are really the words of Taylor Caldwell in her novel, The Listener. But you don't have to go to fiction to hear words like this. I'll give them to you from real life, from Creative Brooding by Robert Raines. And it's a letter from a juvenile delinquent to his parents. And it goes like this. Dear folks, thank you for everything, but I'm going to Chicago to try to start some kind of a new life. You asked me why I did those things and why I gave you so much trouble, and the answer is easy for me to give you, but I'm wondering if you will understand. Remember when I was about 6 or 7, I used to want you to just listen to me. I remember all the nice things you gave me for Christmas and my birthday, and I was really happy with the things about a week at the time that you gave me the things, but the rest of the time during the year, I really didn't want presents. I just wanted all the time for you to listen to me. Like I was somebody who felt things too, because I remember even when I was young, I felt things. But you said you were so busy. Mom, you're a wonderful cook, and you had everything so clean, and you were tired so much from doing all those things that made you so busy. But you know something, Mom? I would have liked crackers and peanut butter just as well if you'd only sat down with me for a while during the day and said to me, tell me all about it so that maybe I can help you understand. And when Donna came, I couldn't understand why everybody made so much fuss, because I didn't think it was my fault that her hair is curly and her skin so white. And she doesn't have to wear glasses with such thick lenses. Her grades were better too, weren't they? If Donna ever has any children, I hope you will tell her just to pay some attention to the one who doesn't smile very much, because that one will really be crying inside. And when she's about to bake 6 or 7 dozen cookies, to make sure first that the kids don't want to tell her about a dream or a hope or something. Because thoughts are important too to small kids, even though they don't have so many words to use when they tell you about what's inside of them. I think that all the kids who are doing so many things that grown-ups are tearing out their hair worrying about are really looking for somebody that will have time to listen a few minutes and who really and truly will treat them as they would a grown-up who might be useful to them, you know, polite to them. If you folks had ever said to me, pardon me, when you interrupted me, I'd have dropped dead. If anybody asks you where I'm going, tell them that I've gone looking for somebody with time because I've got a lot of things I want to talk about. I have only 2 comments to make about that. Listening to someone gives a feeling of self-worth, which is an important commodity today. And also to remind me to tell you that the best thing you can give your children is time to listen to them. And then I close with an important story about my friend Rickard. And it's to make the point that we must listen to those who are hard to listen to. And that's our assignment. And Rickard is a kind of a person that's hard to listen to because he's cerebral palsy. He's been flat on his back for his 57 years. He was 57 on July the 5th. He lives at Betel in Bielefeld, Germany, which is the most remarkable place I've ever been in all my life. I expect to never see one quite like it. I correspond with Rickard. In fact, he sent me a tape that he's in Chinese. I don't understand Chinese, but he sent me. He had one read to me recently. We're doing a movie on him. But when I visited there in House Ebenezer, it was obvious that they wanted me to see him. He's the kind of a person that if he was over there, you'd probably go that way. Because they grimace and they can't control their arms. And he caught sight of me, and he asked who this was. I was from America. He became very excited because Americans had helped him. They'd been volunteers there. And then he found out I was a veterinarian, and he became very excited. He said he had many questions to ask me. And do you ever work on birds? Are you ever able to make them fly again if they have broken wings? How do you give therapy to fish? And so the question went. His last question was, do you employ any Indians in your College of Veterinary Medicine? And without getting into it, you know, what kind he meant, I says, yes, since we have both kinds. But as I said goodbye to him and walked away, I asked my host now, did he mean Native Americans, which are very popular in West Germany today, or did he mean Indians from India? He says he meant Indians from India. See, he's very concerned about Indians from India. In fact, he said, he supports a little child in India. And I was pretty sure I didn't hear him right, but I had.
some years ago, I think in his 40s. He says, there's one thing I failed to tell you, is that Rickard has control of his right foot. And he learned how to paint very beautiful pictures using a mirror on his back. And we sell these pictures, and all the money goes to support a little child in India. Now, I have a picture of Rickard in my office. And if I think I got problems, I really don't have problems. But the story doesn't end there. Because when I was a prisoner, Hitler put out the order that all such people would be put to death because they were less than human. And von Boleswing, who's a sly fellow, a real genius, and a bunch of his associates came to make the final arrangements. And he got Dr. Brand off to the side, and he says, really, what determines whether a person is less than human? And he says, their ability to communicate. So he says, I want you to go with me to the house Patmos where we keep our worst cases. And so he took him there, and I don't know all the ones he showed him, probably Henrietta, hydrocephalic, epileptic, retarded. Sleep when he came, stroked her on the head, called her by name, she turned over, big smile on her face when she saw von Boleswing. Maybe Adolf, he knew about three or four things, but he really appreciated Adolf, and that's how he learned, because there the philosophy is the patients are the professors. And he learned how to really appreciate food, because nobody he knew could have appreciated food more than Adolf. And Adolf knew a couple of other things, and one of them was Boleswing, and he recognized him, you see. And so he went down the list, and he finally turned to Dr. Brandt, and he says, although you may not be able to communicate with these people, it should be obvious to you that we communicate with them. And with that, he turned around and walked back to headquarters, followed by Dr. Brandt. And Dr. Brandt, on getting back to headquarters, said to his associates, we have ceased negotiations, and we will return to Berlin. I am here to tell you that no one at Bethel was harmed, as they were in other places where they were put to death, because somebody took time to listen to those who were hard to listen to. That's the mission for you and for me. That's the call to us, to listen to those who are hard to listen to. I wish you well in that endeavor. I appreciate your attention.